So I guess it's been about 5 years or so since I met you.
It's been a while, yeah.
But anyhow, the you have been coming to the college long before you started working with me. But the victimology class used to be taught by Richard Pompilio, and he was, actually I got to find out exactly what his story was. He's an attorney. I believe his daughter was, she may have been killed, or something happened with his daughter, I believe. And as a result, he started a crime victim service. So he represents crime victims as an attorney. And so he was here teaching the course. And he taught the course for many years, but then he had backed out and they'd asked me to, because when I was in Chatham, we had five homicides during my career, and I'd started a domestic violence awareness program and everything. So they asked me to teach the victimology class. So the first couple of years were kind of a transition. I felt that it was very legalistic the way it was being taught. You know, it's like, here's the law and all. And I said, you know, I wanted first responders to understand what it's like to be a victim, as opposed to just, you know, give me the facts, you know, and processing. So I started trying to get more of an emotional appeal to the course. And so I brought in, I used a lot of documentaries and what have you, attempting to make that connection so that, you know, someday when you're out and you're dealing with a victim, it's like, wow, I kind of remember this. I feel what the victim is feeling. I sense what they're feeling. And to bring more empathy maybe to the job. So as part of that development, I was looking to have the class create some type of awareness program. So our first couple attempts were, they made up posters and boards, and we went over to Lackland during the lunch period. And like just about all the tables that get set up in there, you have a herd of people that come in for lunch, and then they leave for lunch. And, you know, you have everybody sitting there, and it's like, you know, a few people will stop and say, oh, what are you here for? It's like, hey, bro, what's going on? You know, but nobody's really picking up, and they're not really getting a message. So I challenged a class a few years ago, and I said, we need to do something different. And they sort of said, well, can we put together something? And so we sort of brainstormed and started the idea of having some speakers. And you were working with, I think, Kitsy Dixon, yes, at the time, one of the sociology professors back then. And through that and our attempt to do that, Kitsy connected us. And you have since come in and you have talked in my classroom. You have talked here every year for our program. The very first year that you came, I think we had you and Donna Roman. We did a one-night event with two different speakers. We did the candlelight vigil. So since then, I can't say that it's expanded, because we actually have a much smaller audience than we've had in the first few years. But part of it is that you know, I think this year we had so many snow days, and then we were off, and it's just kind of got away from me, and so the class was not able to really get coordinated on advertising and what have you. So one of these days we are going to have just an outstanding, we're going to pack the house here.
Yes, we are.
So, but anyhow, so that's more sort of a history of the event that we've been doing here. So I met Carol, and over the years I've had the opportunity to hear different parts of her story. Carol is a sexual assault survivor as a child. She was, she could tell you about that, through a family member. She was neglected and abused, and just lived, you know, when having heard different parts of the story over the last few years, I swear they can make a Lifetime movie about your life and everything. They've made Lifetime movies about so many other people, and you know, you could write a book, and you could certainly be your story could be a Lifetime movie based on all the stuff you've been through. She was kidnapped and raped. She entered into a relationship. She got married and married into an abusive relationship. She has lived through hell at times, and her story is upsetting and inspiring, because instead of focusing on herself, her life mission is to help stop that from happening again. She has she's regularly on the radio. She hosts a radio show. She is the vice president of the Adult Survivors of Child Sexual Abuse organization. So she hosts the weekly radio show.
We were on the air 6 days a week, and they call in from all over the world. It's not even national anymore.
So anyhow, it is the it's been an absolute pleasure for me to have had the opportunity. We had a heck of a time connecting this time because you changed your email, and then all of a sudden you reached out to the college and you said, "Hey, by the way, I've done this thing." And so it took us a while, but we were able to connect and throw something together, and I'm so glad. So hopefully they get inspired by your message. I've done enough talking for now. I'm going to set my computer up over there so we get the videos queued up, and I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you. Now.
I'm going to wait.
Okay. The reason why I'm here tonight, as a survivor, I don't get paid for anything I do, all right? I'm giving back to them live. And I believe in that. The reason why I'm here is to teach people, you know, what people of abuse like myself go through. I'm not unique, okay? There are so many kids out there who get abused and they keep their mouth shut because they're scared. The perpetrator makes them feel like, you know, if you tell, people are just going to think you're a snotty-nosed kid. They're not going to believe you, okay? Or you're going to ruin the family, and they don't want to be responsible for that. Or I'll kill you, which was my case. My sexual abuse started when I was 6 years old, and I was living with a pedophile uncle, a man who barely fed me, and he was a pedophile. So he just used me, you know, for whenever he felt like it. So it started when I was 6 years old, and then when my mother finally came to pick me up, I had a brother also, and he lived the life of Riley over at her parents' house. He knows nothing about being cold, he knows nothing about being hungry, he knew nothing about being sexually abused or physically abused. Or mentally abused, or any of the abuses, because we do cover all the abuses. Okay, that's physical, mental, sexual, and emotional. Anyway, all right, there's 5 abuses, all of which I had to go through. I did try to commit suicide when I was around 16, 17 years old, and my mother was standing on the side of me telling me to do a good job. And I was always a person that wasn't really a family member, and I didn't really understand why, because I wanted so much to be a part of my family. Come on, what kid doesn't want to be a part of your family, right? But I since found out, after my mother passed away, my stepfather remarried, told me that my mother had been raped. And I said, nah, honey, you have it mixed up. I'm the mother who was raped. And he said, no. He said, your mother was raped too. With the information that I'm gathering, which even my professor here doesn't understand because this is new to me, I had my DNA done. And I'm not a part of that family. I know it in my heart. I always knew there was something wrong when I was a kid. It was my belief, yes, that my mother got raped. But she was so terribly frightened of my father, who was an alcoholic, an abusive one, and I watched many a fight there, every night just about. I think she just had me be part of the family, because she didn't know what my father would do. Anyway, he'd probably take it out on her. You see, when alcoholics like my father was, I mean, who I thought was my father, my bio father, supposedly, they can be either funny alcoholics like I am. I haven't had a drink since 1981. It's been a long time since I've had a drink. That does not mean that I don't want to drink, especially in the summertime when the barbecues are going on and everything, you know. But I haven't had a drink. But my father, he was a vicious drunk. And I knew him as my father then. And what he would do is, he'd hit my brother too. He didn't particularly like him. And my mother was his victim. And for some reason, he didn't touch me. Don't know why, but I was glad. But I was always different. I'd go and I'd find his bottles and I'd smash them. Well, a little kid, they think, you know, if you smash the bottles, there'll be no booze tonight. Maybe there'll be no fight tonight. But then my babysitter said, hey, there might not be Carol tomorrow. What are you doing? Your father's a maniac. He might take all that aggression out on you because you smashed his bottles. And it made sense to me. So that particular day, I went upstairs and I sat on my bed and I thought, my God, what have I done? And he came home from work looking for his bottles. And they were gone. And he called me. See, he knew the difference between my brother and I. My brother would hide under the covers when they were fighting, and I'd sneak down the steps to see what was happening. Not that I could do anything, but still and all, this is what I did. And one night I do know that I saved my mother's life, because he had one of those heavy skillets, the black skillets, the iron skillets, and he was going to hit her over the head. And he said he was going to kill her. And he was trying very hard to hit her over the head, and she was crouched over in the corner of the kitchen. The kitchen's a very dangerous place. And she was down like this, and she's holding her head, and I screamed finally. He knew that I was here. And that's what stopped it, and they broke up right after that. That's how I ended up with a pedophile uncle. She put me in harm's way, not knowing that he was a pedophile, okay? Not knowing this. I didn't tell him. He told me he'd kill me. And I believed him. Now, what am I saying here? You see, there's different kinds of ways that pedophiles, and that's prepubescent, okay? They don't want teenagers, girls that have breasts, you know, or boys, all right, who have developed. They don't want that. They want you when you're still in that nub stage, before you start really growing, your body starts changing into womanhood or manhood. Okay? That's what they're a pedophile. They don't like teenagers. So he loved me, you can be sure of that. I was only 6 years old. 6 years old, and I started to be sexually abused by this monster. For a year and a half I took it. Maybe a little bit more than a year and a half. And I decided, you know what, I don't care if I die. I can't handle this. My mother would come and see me once a week, if that. I didn't know where she lived. I had no telephone number. The school had the telephone number. And of course, my so-called aunt and uncle, they had it too, but no one would give it to me. So I couldn't call her anyway. And she and I, whatever relationship we had, started to drift apart. Because she wasn't like a mother. And she never nurtured me. But wasn't the type of mother that would say, hey kid, how'd you do in school today? What'd you learn? There's none of that stuff going on. Never enough clothing. And my brother, well, he started to become my abuser too. And that's where incest comes from, honey. It comes from the family. Okay, that's incest. And I had to go through that too. I told my mother that. And she says, oh, that happens in families. Well, yes, it does, but it's not supposed to. So I had no help. Now let me tell you something about kids who have no help. I never ever felt like it was my fault. Somehow something told me, this isn't right. This shouldn't be happening. But I was lost. I had no one to turn to. So I became a kid of the streets. You see, when you see kids out on the street, a lot of times these kids end up out on the street because they're running away from foster care or maybe they're being abused. Foster homes are not always wonderful. Let's face it, sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Most of them are. Or they're being abused at home and they can't take it anymore. Hey, I've already been abused. I already knew what that was like. I didn't want to be there anymore. Couldn't handle it. So I went out on the streets, and I did make a lot of friends out on the streets, and they were older than me, and they sort of like took me under their wings. I actually felt loved for once. My father, biological as I thought, had gone out to California, so he wasn't even around, and he remarried also. And I just learned other things about my life, so I thought I had two half-sisters, but I don't. Their lives were ruined by my father, too, because he was a raging alcoholic. You're a raging alcoholic, you don't get help, you're going to be a raging alcoholic wherever you go. It's as simple as that. So, I remember at 17, I got pregnant. Didn't dare tell my mother, because she'd kill me. So, I didn't believe in abortion, and back in those days, you know, things were a little bit different anyway, and I don't want to say thankfully, but I did have a miscarriage. And I feel like I have a little baby up in heaven waiting for me, and I just know I'm going to go there. But you know, so, well, here's one thing, that's only a little bit of my story, and I don't want to get heavy into my story, but I do want to say a few things. Fact, when you're abused as a child, and go through the same type of abuse, especially as I do and did, you don't make good choices in life. You don't know how. And you really don't care either. Boys end up getting into fights, street fights. I hung out with kids who went heavy into heroin. So a lot of street gang fights down in the neck of New York because, you know, maybe the drug deals went bad. Now, something inside of me told me I didn't belong there. But I didn't care because I was an alcoholic. I started to drink when I was around 13 years old. I had my first drink. By the time I was 16, not only did I smoke two packs of cigarettes a day, but I was also drinking an awful lot. Now, I want to tell you something. And the reason why is I drank a lot, too, is because I suffered terribly from panic disorder. Panic disorder is different than panic attacks. Any person can have like a panic attack somewhere, maybe something just, whatever it is, sets them into panic mode, okay? But panic disorder takes over your life. It stops you even from doing the things that maybe you want to do because panic sets in. I felt dirty, I felt stupid, I was told this anyway. I was told that I'd never amount to anything. This is by family members. I had nothing to build me up, nothing to stand on, except for my street people. And I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to have the pavement under my head. Okay? I would take a sweater with me and I'd use that as a pillow. But I actually had fun with that. They didn't try to push me into drugs either. They didn't do that. They looked out for me. They didn't care if I drank. Because especially in those days, drinking didn't mean too much, okay? But what people don't realize, even today, is if you're an alcoholic, it just kills you slower, more slowly. And it kills women faster. Because our bodies are made in such a way, yes, we can have children, but on the other hand, you know, the veins that go to our heart, in fact, I have 3 leaks in my heart, I just found out. And the veins that go in other places of our body are thinner than guys. So guys can take more physical abuse, and they can take more in the operative room. If you have an operation, you're more likely to survive than a woman. Nah. So stay the hell away from booze. You know, it's okay to have a few drinks. I'm not going to preach on that, especially where I came from. But, you know, to get a little buzz is one thing, but to drink until you're falling down and hitting the ground, I mean, that just doesn't even make sense. And I used to drink like that, and the room would spin, and I'd go, wow, I had a good time tonight. It means that I drank so much that, you know, I was totally inebriated and totally out of my mind, maybe. That's what I meant. Now, child abuse, children, victims. Our brains are different than yours. Those who haven't been abused have a different brain than I do. I don't like admitting that. Makes you feel uncomfortable. But what happens is, and you're going to see this in the videos that I have. It teaches you a lot, these videos. They are really fantastic. If a kid witnesses far too much domestic violence, like I did, I saw knives being thrown, and of course my mother being killed almost, and all this other stuff. Blood everywhere. I mean, how many times can you run into a door or something stupid? That's what she used to say. That's what victims do. It changes your brain. It changes the chemical areas of your brain. You go into fight, and you have that ability, you know, your mind does this for you. You're always in danger. Fight and flight, hey. And that affects a certain part of your brain. If you see another type of violence, say you're not being hit, but you're witnessing it, that does something to your brain too. You're going to find this a lot. And also, too, if you're sexually abused or being physically abused yourself, that hurts your brain. All the abuses, the emotional abuse, that hurts your brain. When you're being told all the time that you're nothing, what does that do to you? Can you imagine what that does to a person? If your parents said that you're never going to amount to anything and you're stupid, how do you think that would affect you? What would that do to you? How would you feel?
You would start to believe it, I guess.
Because it's coming from where?
From here, not you.
That's what you think, right? This is why when kids have parents who constantly down them instead of build them up, okay? When they go through stuff like that, it does affect the brain. And that kid will not amount probably to what they could have been. Because with the people who are supposed to love and nurture them, instead of loving and nurturing them, they're slapping them in the face, basically, right? Basically. Now this is what happens to kids. Now you can either rise above it, or like I've done finally, I didn't do it right away. I went on a healing journey. The church got a hold of me and said, "You're a mess." I said, "Yeah." And then I've always had a good sense of humor. I think maybe that's partly what helped save me too, is because I laugh a lot, because I think things are funny and maybe they're not funny. Of course, maybe some of the abuses I went through, maybe that did that, I don't know. But the thing is, you know, you can either fight it, rise above it, or fall back into the streets. See, kids, I had two friends that died right in front of me because they OD'd. The heroin was too pure. They shot up right in front of me, and boom, they're dead. Just like that. And we had to get the heck out of there because the cops were going to come, right? Not a good thing. So, what I'm saying here is, okay, I have a few statistics here. Chances of being struck by lightning is 1 in 6.2 million. Chances of dying in a plane crash is 1 in 400,000. Right. Chances of dying in an auto accident is 1 in 19,000. Chances of a child being raped or sexually abused is 1 in 4. I mean, number 4. Now you see, this is why it's crimes against children, number one, and number two, why it's so important. People don't understand how it affects us. Many times I've had someone say to me, hey, I'm sorry the kid down the street, you know, was abused. That's not going to happen to my kid. 93% of children who are sexually abused know the people that abuse them. It can be family members, that's where it starts sometimes. It can be teachers, it can be at the cops, it can be anyone. All right, pedophiles go where children go. The guy who picked me up in New York, when I lived in Staten Island, I was going to school, and he was evidently, you know, going around the block and checking me out. He decided he wanted me. He had me the longest out of all the girls, 8-year-old girls. I was 8 years old by that time. He had an 8-year-old daughter. I don't know if he touched her or not. But I was with him longer than the other kids. So he took me the furthest away in Staten Island. So in that time that I was with him, I was able to get a good description of him. He had blonde hair, he had blue eyes. He had a plaid shirt on, which matched his plaid seat covers, yuck. But, you know, in those days they had plaid seat covers, all right? I'm giving away my age here. But anyway, the point is, they had plaid seat covers. And I knew that his car was blue. The only thing I didn't know was the license plate number, because on the dashboard in those days, they would write the name of the car, and I knew that it said Plymouth. So I had quite a bit of information for him. Plus, I knew that he had a pinky ring that had a huge diamond in it. And it was a sunny day, and he said to me, when you grow up, if you make men happy, you'll have lots of those. So you see, pedophiles love little girls and boys. Now, not enough is said about the boys. When I say 1 in 4 girls will be sexually abused by the time they're 18, how many girls do you think that come on campus? There's quite a few girls that have already had sexual abuse, but they're hiding it. And 1 in 6 boys, the boys are more apt to hide it than the girls. Because boys are supposed to be macho. They're supposed to be tough. They're brought up that way. Boys, you're brought up that way. You suck it in. You don't talk about it. It happened. Get over it. Sexual abuse and any kind of abuse, you don't just get over. Because it takes away your childhood. It absolutely does. It takes away your childhood. And I'm going to tell you something. I had no childhood because I was too busy trying to survive. I was too busy trying to survive. And that in itself was a job. So these are things that you have to realize about child abuse. Another thing, I had a guy say to me not too long ago, well, I don't see how, child abuse can't hurt my pocket. See, what people don't realize is there's so many ways that child abuse hurts your pocket. Your pocket, everybody's pocket. And I'll tell you how. Children who are, number one, when children are out on the streets and they end up in detention center, who do you think helps pay for that? Any of the state-funded programs that we have for anything, a little tiny bit comes out of state taxes, or a little bit actually comes out of your paycheck, just a little tiny bit. Doesn't take much out of one paycheck. You don't even notice it hardly, but it's there. How about all the stores that get burglarized? How do those people feel with the B&Es going to their stores? They have to get their whole stock back again. Most places are smart enough to have insurance, but they still have to put money into it, okay? So far we know that organizations to help kids who have been abused, we help pay for that a little tiny bit. Places like Detention Center, which I worked at, a little tiny bit. And any organization, it comes out of our paycheck. So guess what? It's a societal problem. It's society. It's not just one person's family. It's everybody. That's why they say it takes the village to grow children up, or even one child. What we're trying to do now is, I have a lot of things that I fight for as a survivor. I'm involved with a lot of different things. First of all, when a pedophile gets caught for the first time, people say, well, maybe he or she, you know, will learn from that. What they don't realize is they don't have just one victim. They have many victims before they get caught. So they have ruined many lives. The only thing is, they get a first-time sentence. Now I'm fighting, what I want is with all the knowledge that I've learned, what I want is first-time offenders to have much tougher sentencing. People think, oh, well, I never did this before, so I won't get much of a sentence, and they're right. They don't. The guy out in New York who raped me, I was one of 14. I was the last one that he raped. He got caught. He only got 3 years in jail. That's it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm 8 years old, by the time he gets out, I'll be 11, and he knows where I live. So you see, there's all different ways that being abused, sexually especially, affects you in a very negative way. And I have some thoughts here. We as the survivors, as we go on to our healing journey, when I say healing journey, what I'm saying to that, and what I mean by that, is we're getting help. So we're starting to go on to our healing journey. You can go 4 steps forward and all of a sudden get triggered by something. And well, you know, you go backwards a few steps. That's okay, that's normal. You keep fighting, you keep learning, and you keep wanting to be a person. And we are people of worth. Each and every single one of us, we were abused, but we're people of worth. It's just that we weren't told we were. Okay, here's some thoughts. We are innocent and guilt-free, yet share feelings of shame and fear. Why do you think that is? Why do we feel shame? Do you know why we feel shame? Because it happened. And not only that, a lot of times a pedophile will make you feel like it's partly your fault. Now I'm going to tell you something that's going to blow your mind. I want to blow your mind. When kids are being sexually abused, right, their bodies respond in such a way that, because God made us that way, that you might like it. Now that may sound crazy to you, but you know that if you're touched, and it can be pleasurable. That goes for women too. Now there's a little part of you that's saying, ooh, this feels good. So they know this because they're not stupid. They're just sick, and they're maniacs, and they belong off the streets because they ruin people's lives. But our body responds to stimuli, doesn't it? And that's normal. So if anyone here knows of someone who's been sexually abused, you try to talk to them or have them call me. I take a lot of calls. have them speak to me. Because I can help straighten their head out to a big degree. I've worked in detention center. I was a part of the Rahway Lifers program, Scared Straight, which I don't think I told you that, but I was. I worked with a lot of juveniles, a lot of kids. I worked at Greystone Psychiatric before they tore it down because it has too much asbestos in it. And I can attest to that. How's that sound? I saw this guy, he was all suited up one day, and he looked like he was from outer space. I said, what's that? They're going in the bottom of the building, they're checking the asbestos again. Anyway, I worked there, I worked with the murderers. Oh yeah, I worked with the murderers. I'll tell you something funny about the murderers. The murderers were actually the easiest to work with. I didn't have to worry about checking on the rooms to see, that's so stupid. Checking on the rooms to see if they made their beds or make sure, you know, put down goal plans for them. Take a shower, that was actually a goal for some of them, right? You know, brush your teeth, all this stuff, because if you're a schizophrenic, your mind deteriorates so badly that you get to the point where you don't want to do anything, all right? I was a floater. They had me floating from building to building, so I worked with all different types of people. The murderers kept their rooms clean. The murderers took showers. They didn't want to be dirty. They didn't want to stink. But they were not allowed out of the building at all, because the people up on the third floor, they were the worst murderers. They were the ones that had absolutely no conscience. They didn't care what they did, and if they got out, they'd do it again. They were the most dangerous. On the second floor, they think, maybe I could have done a little different. On the first floor, well, yeah, I did it, but you know, well, yeah, I'm not really too sorry, all right, I did it. When I was working up on the third floor, sitting next to a lady, she was knitting. I said, what are you knitting? She said, oh, I'm knitting a blanket for my baby. And I said, oh, that's nice. How old's your baby? She said, my baby's dead. And I said, well, how'd the baby die? She said, because I took my baby and I put her in a pot of boiling water. But she was still knitting her blanket. And she said it with no empathy. You see, they have no empathy. They are the psychopaths, the sociopaths. They're both. They're everything. They're nuts and they belong there. Now, on Greystone, we had our own hospital. But it was limited. So if it was too much of a thing, maybe they needed an operation, we would take them, and staff would have to go, we'd take turns, and sit with them for 8 hours at a pop, all right? While they were being, they'd go to Morristown Memorial while they were being operated on. We'd stay there and until the duration of the time that they were allowed then to go back to Greystone. They walked into that hospital, if they were able to walk, in shackles from head to toe. And that's the way they left, too. Because they were truly crazy and very dangerous. Now, what I want to get to you on this is, we are sick as our secrets. This is what happens to kids who don't get help. Kids who don't get help, they develop all kinds of things. I developed phobias, like I said. I had the panic attacks. I turned to alcohol to self-medicate. Alcohol made me feel better. I watered down my parents' liquor cabinet. They didn't realize until they had guests one night, and boy, was I in trouble. They always knew it was me. But anyway, you know, we get into things. I would ride Harleys. I love Harleys even to this day. It's just the way I am. And I didn't want to wear a helmet, though. I had long blonde hair then. I liked, had it blown in the wind and a beer in my hand. I had a good time with that. I really did. And, you know, we put ourselves in harm's way. We get involved with people that we shouldn't get involved with, like the people in the neck of Newark there with their chain fights. And so help me, man. My friends got in trouble one night, the cops came, and there was a bad fight going on. And that, I think all the kids smashed out the lights in the street, it was so dark, you couldn't see anything. The only thing I could see were the white socks that were running down the street, or the police officers. That's it. Well, I was drunk. I didn't care. I was laughing. What do I care? I'm standing right next to the car, so I got into the vehicle, and we didn't get caught. But as we were going down that street, they were swallowing the drugs that they had got. Bags, little baggies. Okay, that's what they were doing. I was like, my God. If they ain't gonna kill them, it's gonna be that. But they didn't die. So, all right, you know, see, this is the thing. This is what happens to children of abuse. We don't know who the heck we are. Many times we lose our identity. With a male, if he is abused sexually by the priest, I'm Catholic, so I can speak about this. If we get sexually abused, I mean, if the males get sexually abused by the priest, many times their sexuality gets screwed up because they think, well, this guy likes me. Why does he like me? There must be something wrong with me. In fact, and I know Bill won't mind me mentioning this, but he had been abused by quite a few priests. And he had problems with his sexuality because he really thought that he might be gay, which is fine today. We don't care about stuff like that. But back then, that wasn't a cool thing. We noticed. Right? Things have changed. But still, it screwed up the sexuality, you see? And I suppose it would be the same thing if a woman was abusing, say, me. Maybe I'd get messed up too, thinking, whoa, they both like me. You never know. I just know what I know. So you are sick of your secrets. Now this is especially true for men. Women are naturally predisposed to share with other women, because we have big mouths, don't we? You might tell a friend of yours, this is what happened to me. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But again, men keep it to themselves. Because we have found so little support for men who have suffered child abuse, and we'll pay a little more special attention to the available things for them. That means they're talking about, there is today more out there for men now. You can find help. In fact, if you go to the website, www.nasca.org, all right, www.nasca.org, on that website, you'll see the world turning around. You'll see on the left-hand side a picture of the world turning around. And what you do is you click onto that, services. We have many services that we offer people. We are worldwide now. If you click onto that service, say you're from Virginia. You scroll down to Virginia, once that site opens, you scroll down to Virginia, and there's all different kinds of services available. That can be for domestic violence, it can be for men being abused, that can be for women being abused, that can be for both or all, okay? So we have that service. If you know of someone, again, I'm going to give you my cards, there's not many of you in here, so I'm going to give you my card, and if you need help, or if you know of someone who needs help, they can call me. And I will do the very best that I can to get them hooked up with a service. These groups, I'm speaking about groups now. Groups are, I don't want to say they're fun exactly, but everybody's there for the same reason. They have no reason to feel ashamed, right? There's no reason to feel ashamed. And you can help each other. You can help each other. And that's very, very important. And that's how you too can get on your healing journey. So for God's sake, if you know of someone who's in trouble, go to that person and say, hey, I can get you help. And you can tell them all about me. I don't care. All right? Verbal abuse. You get into a relationship. I'm going to do this for 5 more minutes and then we'll get to the videos. Verbal abuse, that affects the brain in a different way. Physical abuse, that affects the brain in a different way. This speaks about recovery, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, that's what we're all about. plus working and fighting for children. There are, this has gone up now, there are 50 million survivors of sexual abuse in America alone. These are the ones that have spoken about it. That means there's really a lot more, okay? Because most people don't talk about it. They'll wait until maybe they're 40 or 50 years old. We've even had people older than that for the first time tell their story, like I said a year, years ago now. Because they're so ashamed and filled with guilt themselves. And they're afraid people wouldn't like them anymore or something. All right, 300,000 children and youth are estimated to be at risk of exploitation. That means being taken out of the state. That means they're pimping them out, they're taking them to different places, and they're doing all kinds of things with these children. That sounds crazy, but that's the way it is. And they're at risk of that exploitation. 100,000 are prostituted annually, at least. These are the kids that run out of their homes and from foster care, wherever they are. Okay. 93% are abused by someone, yes, that they know, love, or trust. That can be the babysitter, the guy down the street, it could be teachers, like I've already gone over that. 20% of child sexual abuse victims are under the age of 8. Yeah, I was 6. It's when mine started. Most never tell, and some don't recall the abuse. The mind is a funny thing. It has a certain area that if it's too much for you to cover in your conscious memory, in your conscious thought, it'll actually go back into your brain and stay there. And then, because it's such a marvelous thing, you'll actually have flashbacks at times. You say, what the heck was that? And these flashbacks are actually what was in the subconscious that was pushed back there from abuse. It's coming forward, and you're going to become aware of what it is, okay? I suggest you get help when that happens, because you're going to need it. Okay. More than 60% of pregnant teens have been sexually abused. More than 60%. 55% of girls living on the streets engage in prostitution. 55%. 20% of prostituted girls are transported across the state lines for services. Unfortunately, that number's gone up. The average age of entry for girls into prostitution is between 12 and 14. You ever go into Walmart? I don't care. I go into Walmart all the time. You ever see those kids up there for missing exploited children, the signs? We work with those people. We promote any organization that helps children. And I look and I see the faces, and I did see one that I knew. Blew me away. All right, 1 in 7 children who are regular internet users receive sexual solicitations online. 1 in 7. 1 in 3 is exposed to unwanted sexual materials. 1 in 25 receives a request to meet someone in real life that they met online. 800,000 I've met with the guardian angels, and I know this to be true. 800,000 children are reported missing every year in the United States, or 2,000 a day. Now, 58% of those kids, it's because of the family. Okay, maybe the father took off of them, or the mother took off of them, but the rest of them, who knows? An estimated 200,000 are abducted by family and members, and 58%, I just said that, okay. In the most serious cases, a child is abducted by a stranger and killed. Now, I did resist. I did resist. And I did get hurt. And that made me settle down, because I knew, in my little girl mind, that I would probably be killed or something else if I didn't behave and do what he wanted me to do. Okay. According to the Department of Justice, 74% of the children who were abducted and later found murdered were killed within 3 hours. So, see, this is why this is a big thing. We're going to have a little bit of a short night tonight, although we will discuss this. I think you're going to want to. But I want you to watch very carefully and listen to what's being said on these videos. I chose them. I think they're very good. And you'll learn from them. Okay? And then after that, that'll be that.
Which one do you want to
discuss? Well, the first one we discussed, and then the second one, the domestic violence. Through their eyes, or something, through their eyes. Oh, through our eyes, okay. Not the blue ribbon part of the ministry, and it has some stats on the back. And here's who I am. Do you know someone? What do you tell?
Trauma is inability to sleep or interrupted sleep, inability to focus on what's going on, really not able to attend to learning. Adults need to be aware of children who are exposed to violence and intervene early and stop it.
I don't like the environment that I see. People getting killed every day, drug deals, people getting snatched, raped, cut up.
Whether it is a child who witnesses violence or a child who is the victim, you can't be fearful and be able to live your normal life. You have to be able to think clearly, and when you're traumatized, you can't do that.
Violence continues then to affect the child and their perception of the community, of their family. The danger is right around the corner. And the brain gets wired to expect danger.
My dad started, like, actually physically beating me
to the point to where I go to school with covered in bruises. I don't know how many times I've been threatened to be killed by my own dad.
My brother got shot in the head. He ain't make it.
It makes you afraid at times. It makes you feel that, oh my God, you know what? I just lost a friend. I just lost a family member. It just makes you feel that, hey, I could die. Next, I could be the next one dead.
What trauma does is it triggers what's called the amygdala in the brain, which is our fight-flight-freeze set.
And it truly is a change in the brain and a change in the stress hormones that are flowing through the body.
All our brains have what we call alarm systems. Because the brain now has been wired for danger and it's triggered into this fight-flight, we don't just get over a traumatic event. It continues to impact us.
I started hearing my mom scream in the middle of the night. And it got to the point where he started like beating me and my sisters. I let my anger build up, didn't talk to anybody about it. When you hold everything aside, it's like a bomb and you get, it was like you're ready to explode and just somebody pushed that last button.
Most kids who've experienced violence oftentimes have experienced multiple types of violence. In the kids we see, the average number of different types of violent trauma is 4. And so complex trauma that affects multiple areas of the brain because it's ongoing.
Maybe it's gang warfare. Maybe it's drug use and abuse in the family. Maybe it's domestic violence. Maybe it's bullying at school. And if there is a layering effect of cumulative violence, it changes literally the DNA.
It all started off with the hugging game. He would take us into his room. We would sit on his lap and he would hug us, and we weren't supposed to tell anyone.
When I was 5, I would have to leave kindergarten class and go home and have sex with this man who was in his 50s. I remember the long walk home and crying, falling down and having to get back up and walking on.
Child sexual abuse exists in the neighborhood. It exists, unfortunately, at our schools, at our churches, at our homes, everywhere. And there are children out there suffering.
My first assault was in high school. I met a guy at the church, and he wanted to be my friend. I thought it'd be great. And instead, he assaulted me, and I felt very scared.
Have a child that doesn't get to work through that abuse in an appropriate manner, that abuse doesn't go away. It lives in that child. Exposure to violence in childhood has been found to be associated with a really unbelievable range of long-term impacts.
Very young children who are exposed to violence many times have difficulty in establishing a trusting relationship. These children have fears.
You're twice as likely to develop depression. You're probably 3 times as likely to develop some type of anxiety disorder.
As they move into school age, they may have very, very serious behavior problems. As we look at adolescents, we see children running away. Sometimes children may be involved in the juvenile justice system, which puts the child at risk for being an adult offender. And so the cost of violence is staggering.
I felt isolated. Nobody knew what I was going through. To go 3 years without talking about it, I imploded.
Finally, after like stressing and stressing and keeping everything bottled up and everything building up, I just finally broke down one day and attempted suicide.
Suicide is the 3rd leading cause of death of children and adolescents in this country. We always ask in every case, what role might child abuse have played?
My mother, she knew that stuff was going on, but it just seemed like she didn't really care. She never stopped that abuse. And to this day, I never forgot what some of my family members have done to me.
These are traumatized kids. And so how do we then, as adults, professionals, caregivers, put a system around children that really is trauma-informed.
Happy feeling. Good job. Okay?
What do we do differently to help rewire their brain? And then ultimately, how do we build capacity in order to really help our kids?
Everybody come together, whether it's in the community, in the home, in the school, wherever children are, and child by child, think of ways in which we can intervene early and educate people about what children need in order to grow, to thrive, and to continue to be resilient human beings.
Now, I think you see a lot of me in that, because that's what I want in the world. And it also, it shows too, like I was starting to explain, how it does affect your brain. They say that children who have been through all of the abuse, that our brains are smaller. I don't like that. But that's what it says, okay? That might be in the next one, or maybe in some of my literature. I have so much. But our brains are, that's why we're different. We weren't born that way. A person who is a psychopath, they're born, okay, in a certain way. That's different. That's cute. Do 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 do. I can do that. But anyway, they're born differently. they're born differently, and their brains are different than everyone's. Okay, but children who are abused, our brains become different. That's the difference. Well, only 30% of people like myself abuse children. By the way. I think that number's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
30% of people like yourself being victims of
child abuse. Yeah. And by that I mean sexual. The show is abuse at home, not sexual violence.
The child abuse awareness video on the teacher too.
Yo, Mario, what's up?
Yeah, come here.
you did something.
She doesn't want to talk to you, man. She doesn't want to talk to you. What are you going to do about it, huh?
Again?
No.
Is that what your drug test is going to tell me?
Yes.
I've known you for a while, and I believe you're a good kid, but your anger could be your undoing. So you've got to do something about that.
Stupid. I don't even know what happened. I would never hurt our baby.
How am I supposed to trust you? You just broke the one promise they made. You know, I don't want him to grow up with parents like ours.
What are you talking about? You had it easier than I did.
Seriously?
I'm sorry. Look, all I'm saying is that I'm not like your old man, okay? I can be in control. Can I hold my baby now, please?
Go clean yourself up. I don't want blood on our baby. Close. trouble, okay? I just want to know what's going on. So the reason we're recommending testing is we're kind of confused with what's going on. I mean, he's such a sweet kid, but he just seems to be having so much difficulty functioning. Okay, I mean, he is hyperactive. His teacher keeps coming to me and, you know, telling me about all of his learning problems. She seems to think that he has ADHD. But, you know, at other times, you know, he just seems to go off into another world. You know, I'm just starting to wonder if it's maybe something developmentally. Yeah, but I mean, then there's other times when he just explodes and gets aggressive. I'm just starting to think that maybe given his family history that it may be some form of bipolar. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to get back to me. I hope this helps inform your testing. Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Difficult things you've lived through and why you may be behaving and acting in these ways. If it's okay with you, I want us to work together to see what we're going to do about this.
I'm sorry for breaking my promise. I'm going to work on getting better, okay?
Remember my face.
criminal. Now you're no good when you're on the other criminal talking to you. Because if you do a criminal act, you're doing a criminal act. Breaking sword on, starting fires, all the stuff you see on TV. We should have all the men that you pick. And our First Amendment is freedom of speech. And no one should have the right to take that away from us. Okay, what's the election that you have here? And then we'll pull them out. Now, I want to thank all of you who came out here, okay? So happy.
If you see a kid, and everything is always you don't have to give your name. You can call 1-800-4-A-CHILD. Now that's a national phone number. So if you want to stay really far away from it, okay? I don't know what state you guys are from. But you know, that's the national number. You can do that, and they'll send the right proper people over to that place. I know I called at 2 o'clock in the morning to report something, and there was someone right there. They have counselors all night long who are trained. It's not, you're not going to get a machine that says, call me in the morning, or get back to me, or I'll get back to you, give me your telephone number, there's someone right there. You might hear a little bit of music for about, like a minute, but then the counselor comes on. because they are that busy. Every 10 seconds, a report of child abuse is made. You'd say, that's great, and it is great. But let me tell you something. Do you know how many children have been abused in this hour and a half that we've been together, a little bit more? What we as society have to do, because we don't get much help from political or anything, do we? We have to be the ones that will help stop this abuse. Let me tell you something about pedophiles. Pedophiles, if they see you have an educated child, and what is an educated child? Do you know what I mean by that? An educated is a child whose parents do care about them. And they sit down and they tell them about their body parts with no shame. God made all of us. And they give it a name. I had the point. I didn't know what the heck was happening to me. You have a penis, you have a vagina. So what? You have a head, you have shoulders. Describe that to your children. Usually they'll let you know when they want to know, because like in the bath, they'll say, Mommy, what's this? Daddy, what's that? Whatever the case might be. Don't be ashamed of your bodies. Don't give them names like coochies and all this other stuff. It is what it is, right? So let's just, let's help our children. Teach them what's inappropriate touch. A lot of people use the bathing suit area. They're comfortable with that. If anyone touches you in the bathing suit area, that's abuse. No one has the right to touch you in the bathing suit area, whether you're male or female, right? But then they also leave out what can be done orally or anally. So I think that the whole thing should be covered. And you know, if you sit down with your kids and you say, Mommy and Daddy want to talk to you, you can role play. The mother and the father can role play a little bit first as to how they're going to talk to their children. This is very important. And you know what? Kids' minds are like sponges. And they don't know about embarrassment unless you act embarrassed. Okay? So if you sit down and take that time with your children, does anyone here have a child? I know you do. I have a couple, there's one right there. But anyway, the point is this. If you take that time to sit down with your child and tell them about their body, tell them what's right, what's not right, and that you'll be there for them no matter what, and you will always believe them, you're building a bond between your child and yourself. If you have brothers and sisters who have children, talk to them. Don't let them learn about things out on the street. That's no place to be. Lord Jesus, I know that. All right? So you teach them first before they learn the wrong place. Okay, that's all I have to say tonight. I thank you very much for being here. And I'm going to applaud for you, because let me tell you something. This is a hard thing. It's a hard thing to listen to. It's a hard thing, to watch. But it's necessary. Now, they have the women out there talking about their sexual abuse and all this stuff. I'm not saying that's bad. Now I want to have a hashtag child abuse CSA, okay? That's what we're starting on NASCA. Because if the women can get out there and talk about their abuse at work, we should have something for children too. And I want people to be just as comfortable to talk about child abuse as the women are to talk finally about their abuses too. And that goes for men too, in case some chicken comes on to you or something. It's not right. How many of you have ever had a father? You go to high school and you're a good looking kid, and a female sort of looks at you a little funny, and you get a little friendly with her. And the father says, I've seen this happen. The father says, hey, good for you, son. Hey, good for you. Let me tell you something. That's abuse. You know why it's abuse? First of all, you're under 18. I'm saying a teenager. You're under 18. And a lot of times, she can easily pull you into her apartment as a guy could easily pull a girl into an apartment. It happens both ways. Huffington Post had a whole list of teachers not too long ago. Excuse me, professor. But, you know, who were, you know, like messing around with their kids, okay? And it didn't matter whether you were a female or a guy, because, again, we always remember this. Pedophiles go where children go, and then sex offenders, so it's pedophiles / sex offenders, they're all sex offenders, but the ones who like teenagers, they're in another category. But it all comes down to the same thing, doesn't it? Okay. So just remember that, all right? And thank you for showing up. I'm glad you came here. And next year, we're going to have so many people here that we're going to have a huge vigil, and we're going to just bust out this chapel. Yes, we are.
Do you want to explain the photos are recommended?
Oh, yeah. This boy here, these are real kids, by the way. These aren't just parents. Oops, someone away. This is a real child. And we have artists. You see, when I say we're people of worth, I play the piano, I sing, I love my music. This person here is an artist, right? And on the back here is Shadows of the Night, written by Mary Graziano. She does the poetry in Nazca. She does a lot of it. And she says, alone in the night, they cry out in fear. Ashamed and abused, they hide to disappear. A living hell that binds them and squeezes them tight. These are the children of the night. Bruised and alone to face so much abuse, their throats are squeezed tight as if in a noose. Silence from fear, the scars tell it all. Nowhere to run, no one to call. Monsters who savagely rape for their pleasure, taking innocence away from our treasures. Our children can't fight, so many will die. So many tears in our eyes, oh how we do cry. Shackled and bound, their minds blocked it away to try and escape the torturous days. Their bodies are his to do as he pleases, spreads open their legs, and soon he releases. We can't sweep it away or pretend it's not there. We must open our eyes and show them we care. Children need to be loved, safe, and protected. With God's help, we all have been selected. We feel, do you feel, pain for all the children. That's why we must fight and stand up for the rights. Stand up for the rights. Feel, do you feel pain for all the children? We must release them and save them from the shadows of the night. Now, so she takes care of the poetry, and the other one, her friend, is the artist. And yes, this is a young man that went through terrible things too. So that's this picture here. This picture here reminds me of myself. This is a real little girl. I don't know her. But it says here, she needed a hero. She needed a hero. See, we can be the heroes. She needed a hero, and that's what she became. So as she grew up, she turned out like a person who, you know, goes out and does things like I do, I guess, I don't know. But anyway, it's a very good picture. It looks a lot like me when I was a child. I was skinny, I had bruises all over. I see bruises all over this child here. And terrible circles over the eyes and so forth. And this over here, oh, there's a little boy, yeah. Many times, children are held captive, especially the youngest children. They found that out in all of everything that they've examined. Many times they found out that the younger they are, the more abused are those children. And so this little kid here, he looks like he's what? Maybe 5, 4? I don't know. Kind of hard to tell. What do you think? Kind of hard. But a lot of times they'll lock a child away. And that's what this child, this is what she's representing here, is that this child is locked away. And then that person comes in, hardly feeds them, they're hardly bathed, and, you know, they get sexually abused. I used to wait for the doorknob to turn, and I knew my uncle was coming in. I mean, it can be all terrible, okay? So that's what that picture is. And then, of course, the Nazca. And That also reminds me when I got a little older. Very isolating. Okay, very isolating. The primary mission of NASCA is to reduce the incidence of child abuse in the world today and to offer recovery to those many millions of adults who still suffer from the pain and consequences of the abuses they experienced in their youth. So that's why I want you to call the services. You see the world turning around? If you see people, if you know people who need help as an adult, that's one of the services, one of the many services, we have about 30 that we offer, okay? So don't be afraid or ashamed to help someone. Instead, be ashamed not to. All right, there you go. Thank you, and next year, we'll have a meeting. I told you what we're going to do.
Thank you very much for coming. Tomorrow night, we have Dave Curley coming up. And he survived the